Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, October 12, 2015. The UN Security Council demands an immediate end to all fighting in South Sudan and threatens additional sanctions to those who don't respect the ceasefire.
The United Nations Department of Peacekeeping Operations has told the Security Council precisely what it needs in order to keep troop and police contributors safe and empower them to do their job.
And Ugandan troops begin withdrawing from South Sudan.
We expect, therefore, that working together with the SPLA, that force working under the UN should be able to keep security.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The spokesman for the Uganda People's Defense Force, or UPDF, says Ugandan troops are now withdrawing from South Sudan. Colonel Paddy Nkunda says the United Nations mission in South Sudan will provide security to various parts of South Sudan.
So the withdrawal has started today, and we expect to complete by the first week of November 2016.
Asked if he thought the withdrawal of Ugandan troops will spur more unrest in South Sudan, Nkunda had this to say.
The United Nations has sanctioned a total of 1,000 strong force, in addition to the 1,300 policemen. We expect, therefore, that working together with the SPLA, that force, working under the UN, should be able to keep security.
The withdrawal of the Uganda People's Defense Force was one of the key demands of the rebels during months of on and off talks, which eventually led to a peace deal in late August. All foreign forces were supposed to leave South Sudan by the 10th of this month. Nkunda says UPDF is implementing the peace deal signed by the two warring parties.
What we are doing is what was agreed upon in the Addis Ababa peace agreement, that foreign forces should withdraw within 45 days. And that is exactly what we are doing. We will not break the agreement, and we are targeting it.
Nkunda did not say how many Ugandan troops are in South Sudan. UPDF were invited into the country by the government of South Sudan. Ugandan troops are stationed at Juba International Airport, Nesitu, and Bor. Once the Ugandan troops leave, a neutral combined force made up of the SPLA in opposition and government troops are expected to oversee the security of Juba. South Sudanese Information Minister Michael Makui says there are no arrangements made between Juba and Kampala for the withdrawal of the UPDF. He says the SPLA in opposition have not yet signed minutes of security workshop held in Addis Ababa last month. Makui says the withdrawal of UPDF depends on the outcome of the Addis workshop. Makui says, quote, "There is no way you would ask the Ugandan forces to withdraw at a time when the warring parties have not yet decided to implement the peace agreement," end quote. President Kiir says in an opinion piece published in the Washington Times newspaper over the weekend that the peace deal brokered by IGAD Plus undermines the sovereignty and the democratic institutions of South Sudan. Mr. Kiir also says the peace deal rewards insurrection and violence by giving rebels equal status with an elected government. He goes on to argue that the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, which the peace deal sets up to police an already shaky ceasefire, should not be headed by a foreigner. South Sudan's international partners, including the United States, have called for the monitors to be deployed quickly, saying they are a crucial part of the peace deal. President Kiir also says in his editorial that demilitarizing Juba and several state capitals as called for in the peace deal would violate South Sudan's territorial integrity. He says the government voiced its objections to the deal but was told to keep quiet. Mr. Kiir says he signed the deal in spite of being threatened by South Sudan's international partners. He says he is still committed to the deal even though he has many objections to it and asks the international community to give South Sudan a chance to show that it is committed to peace and democracy. Mr. Kiir has voiced many of these criticisms before, but this time he is repeating it in the columns of a U.S. newspaper. The Washington Times is the much smaller of two dailies published in Washington, D.C. The UN Security Council has authorized additional measures to help its more than 12,000 peacekeepers in South Sudan protect civilians and pressure the warring parties to implement the August peace deal. From the United Nations in New York, VOA's Margaret Bashar has more.
The 15-member council demanded an immediate cessation of all violence as the fragile peace deal continues to suffer violations by both sides. It threatened more sanctions against spoilers to the peace process and those perpetrating attacks against peacekeepers and aid workers. The council urged the Secretary General to complete deployment of the mission, known as UNMISS, to its full strength of 12,500 troops and police, including equipment such as tactical helicopters and unarmed drones to help peacekeepers protect civilians. The decision to use drones in South Sudan has been controversial, with several council members expressing concern about it, including Russia and Venezuela, who abstained in Friday's vote. The government in Juba also strongly opposes the use of drones. The UN has used them in DRC and Mali, saying they are an asset in large, difficult-to-patrol countries with too few troops. U.S. Deputy Ambassador David Pressman said the Council has a duty to properly equip peacekeepers it sends into harm's way.
The United Nations Department of Peacekeeping Operations has told the Security Council precisely what it needs in order to keep troop and police contributors safe and empower them to do their job. It is incumbent upon this Council to deliver, as we have. History has repeatedly demonstrated how dangerous it is to deploy peacekeepers who are not adequately equipped to do what is asked of them.
The resolution, which extends the mission through December 15th, also asked that the Secretary General provide technical assistance for the creation of a hybrid court in South Sudan, envisioned by the AU's Peace and Security Council, to help foster justice, accountability, and reconciliation. South Sudan's envoy warned the Council that negative threats of sanctions would undermine cooperation and peace. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The deputy governor of Western Equatoria State says the humanitarian conditions in Mundri County is going from bad to worse. He says SPLA soldiers burned down civilian houses and looted their properties last week. As VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington, SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre is calling on all lawmakers in the area to determine who is attacking civilians and to end the violence. We apologize for that technical error. We will come back to that story later. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What do opposition political parties have to say about the new states? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what traditional instrument do you like to listen to most?
A drum. Sounds very well for me. Like when they are drumming, sounds very well.
A flute. It sounds great.
A guitar. I like it because, you know what, eh? My brother has it at home. So even its structure, yeah, it's good.
Amadinda. I don't know how they call it in English, but it's kind of wooden. They also use wood to play it, yeah. It's laid down, some kind of woods which they keep on banging. It brings out some good sound, like a piano maybe.
Yes, I mostly like to listen to the drum because it sounds so well. In fact, when you listen to those drums, you can get some kind of message.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. In western Bahr al-Ghazal state, hundreds of residents of Raja County are calling for a 29th state to be included in the configured internal map of South Sudan. President Kiir ordered earlier this month that the number of states be expanded from 10 to 28 and the configuration be complete by the beginning of November. But at a meeting this morning in Wau, a group of intellectuals, traditional chiefs and civil society organizations say they want another state to be added to the list. As Michael Atit reports from Wau, Raja County residents say they need a state to prevent flare-ups of violence between farmers and cattle keepers.
Adil Athanasius Surur represented Raja County intellectuals at this morning's meeting. He says that while citizens of Raja County support President Kiir's order to create new state and reconfigure the old ones, they also want their own estate. Surur says many people in Raja County are farmers, and if they are put in a state with cattle keepers, as would happen if President Kiir's order is followed to the letter, there is likely to be more communal conflict in the future.
If it is meant to devolve power or take towns to the people, we accept. But when you bring two ethnically, culturally divergent entities together, there will be no harmony. We cannot put pastoralists and agriculturalists and expect harmony and peace among them.
Raja County sits on the border of Sudan and the Central African Republic. Because it is a border area, Surur says, it is better to minimize the risk of any conflicts in the region because the violence could be manipulated by the neighboring countries. He notes that the people of Raja County have lived for decades without inter-ethnic or communal fighting.
We therefore are appealing to your esteemed office to reconsider our appeal to avoid any future frictions between the pastoralists and farmers, and therefore secure sustainable peace and development for our people by granting Raja the status of a state with the capital in Raja due to all the above-mentioned considerations.
Under the order of Mr. Kiir signed on October 2nd, Loli State would be made up of Awil North and West, where many people make a living by cattle herding, and Raja County, where many are farmers. Surur notes that Awil North and West have a combined population of nearly 500,000 people, while Raja's resident number only around 170,000. Surur says residents of Raja County fear that they would be dominated and overruled by the two Awil counties if they are part of the new Lol state. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
And in Juba, leaders of South Sudan's two opposition political parties say they also support President Kiir's order to expand the number of states in the country to 28. The head of South Sudan Democratic Forum, Martin Elia Lomuro, told reporters in Juba today that the move is entirely legal. And Martin Tako Moi, leader of the United Democratic Salvation Front, says the president has every right to reconfigure South Sudan's states and add new ones. Both parties are allied with President Kiir's government. Philip Taunaleu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Reading from a statement, Lomuro, who is also the Cabinet Affairs Minister in Mr. Kiir's government, said 10 opposition political parties agreed at a meeting on Saturday to back the creation of more states. He says Mr. Kiir created the states in response to strong demand from the South Sudanese people for greater power at the local level.
The continuous mass jubilation of South Sudanese, both at home and abroad, following the issuance of the order, affirms the will of our people for decentralization.
Lomuro dismissed accusations that the creation of the new states violates South Sudan's transitional constitution.
Those opposed to the presidential order questioned its legality. Unfortunately, they concentrated on provisions of Article 162, sub-articles 1, 2, 1, 3, and 4, in total isolation of the power of the president to initiate constitutional amendment and legislation as provided for in Article 101F.
Lomuro says by creating new states and configuring the 10 that exist today, President Kiir was representing the will of the people, as he is obliged to do under South Sudan's transitional constitution. Lomuro says his party backs the move to redraw South Sudan's internal map. He says any opposition parties that have spoken out against the Kiir order are simply trying to make a political point. Lomuro did not specify which opposition parties he was referring to, but the Opposition National Alliance umbrella, which is led by Lemakol, has condemned the move to create 28 states as unconstitutional. Many of South Sudan's international partners, including the United States, the European Union, and regional bloc IGAD, have also spoken out against the move to create new states. Lomuro says that surprised him.
We call upon them to respect the sovereignty of South Sudan, the feelings of its people, and the pride of its citizens for having earned independence after over 5 decades of a bloody war, gratifyingly with support of some of these organizations and countries.
IGAD, led 19 months of talks that eventually led to the agreement to end the conflict in South Sudan. Mr. Kiir signed the peace deal with a pass to 10 states in South Sudan, not 28, in late August. Martin Takom Moi is the head of the opposition United Democratic Salvation Front. He said his party also backs Mr. Kiir's decision to redraw the state map.
And we stand behind his decision to support it fully, regardless of voices here and there, especially from the international community, which we in the party consider an interference in our internal affairs and called for.
10 political parties signed the statement read out by Lemoro today in support of Mr. Kiir's order to expand the number of states in South Sudan. Lemoro insists that the reconfigurations of South Sudan states will not derail the peace agreement signed in August. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
And in Jonglei, state government officials are also in favor of the presidential order to create 28 states and are promising to do everything to support the newly created states. Jacob Achek reports for VOA from Bor.
Jonglei state officials are vowing to declare all their government assets through a committee that will decide how to distribute those assets for Jonglei and other newly created states. Those assets include government vehicles, office furnishings, computers, phones, and other equipment. Jonglei Governor John Kong Nguyen says most, if not all, of the state assets were destroyed when the fighting broke out in late 2013. Speaking in Arabic, Governor Kong says regarding Jonglei or in the three states of Greater Upper Nile, their assets were destroyed during the conflict in 2013. He said in the other state of Greater Bahr al-Ghazal and Equatoria did not experience a problem with their assets, so they will be divided. Kong says one is state declare what government asset it has left, it will divide them into the three states of Western Biech, Eastern Biech, and Jonglei states. He says Buma state is not included because they have their own independent administration. Local government officer Simon Makolayuen March, who is the chief administrator of Makwach Payam, insists that establishing more state in South Sudan is constitutional and must be respected. But he doubts there are many worthwhile assets to discuss at this point.
As a person who have been here for some years, I did not see an asset that are going to be divided. In terms of building, I did not see office that have been put up by the government. But if there is an asset that the government knows, then it will divide it. Maybe if there are money that were allocated for a building, that will be done. Yeah, these are the money that will be divided.
William Garang Majuk, Acting Director General of Jonglei State Parliamentary Affairs, says issues of dividing of assets is being carried out across the country. But he says Jonglei, Unity and Upper Nile State were severely impacted by the conflict, which resulted in the displacement of hundreds of thousands of people from those three states. Majuk also agrees with the government that Jonglei has no important assets to be divided into three states.
About the asset, I think there will be implications. Although it is the right thing to be done, some other people will feel that they own it and that taking the asset away from them will really give a mixed feeling to individual. But I think the government and the committee of asset will have to be fair enough to make sure that each and every estate that was being created out of Jonglei estate is given its own right.
Governor Kong says he hopes that the president's order, which he says is intended for taking the town to the people, will not interrupt the IGAD compromise peace signed by both President Kiir and Amit opposition leader Riek Machar in August. I'm Jacob Achek reporting for VOA News in Bor.
And now we go to our story about Western Equatoria. The deputy governor of Western Equatoria State says the humanitarian conditions in Munri County is going from bad to worse. He says SPLA soldiers burned down civilians' houses and looted their property last week. As VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington, SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre is calling on all lawmakers in the area to determine who is attacking civilians and to end the violence.
The most affected areas in Mundir County are Kotobi, Jambo, Kediba, and Lakamadi. Deputy Governor Bulena Biatara Kim says the attack on Mundir last week has displaced all of the residents in the area. The deputy governor says after the SPLA chased the gunmen, they were fighting and then attacked the civilians. Abiatara says state officials do not know why the army attacked civilians in broad daylight.
Of course, they defeated the group and they chased the group away from them. And unfortunately, a few of the soldiers decided to come to town and provoking the situation. That's why civilians got scared.
Abiatara says an unknown number of civilians were killed, including women and children. He also says many children fled to different areas and do not know if their parents are dead or alive. He says survivors are trying to reunite with their families at the moment. Abiatara says civilians are in hiding and have little or no food to eat.
There is hunger, there is a disease, also there is water problem. And they really need immediate intervention of the agencies to help the situation.
Richard Muller, a former MP of Mundir County, who has joined the SPLA in opposition, confirms they have forces in Mundir, but insists they are not attacking civilians.
It is true, we have SPLA-IO forces. Yes, Mundir was attacked by the government. Since 16th of last month until today, they are attacking us. The civilians have fled the town. All the villages around are deserted. And people are staying in the bushes because of government attack.
Last week, Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre said the army was only fighting a group of gunmen in western Equatoria State after SPLA helicopter gunship attacked villages in Lui, Jambo, Mundir, and Amadi. Aguirre acknowledges civilians in the area suffered great losses in the crossfire during their battle with the armed group.
There needs an investigation to go to the ground. Let the politician and the MP go to the ground to see who is the one attacking the SPLA forces in Mundir town, and let them talk to those armed groups, and then visit the SPLA and see what is happening.
Aguirre says the armed group which the SPLA is battling in Mundir is still hiding in the vicinity of Mundir town. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
The Australian state of Victoria has a new South Sudanese community leader. Court Michael Manoa says he will use his office to address the many challenges facing South Sudanese living in the state capital, Melbourne. Michael says he hopes to use his experience as a lawyer and a policeman to help South Sudanese know and assert their rights. Roar Akot, a volunteer with Sudan Australia Integrated Learning, or SEAL, a non-profit, spoke with Michael in Melbourne shortly after he was elected to his new position.
I became the president of the South Sudanese Community Association in Victoria when there were expression of interest that were called upon. And in January 2015, after the retreat which took place in December 2014, a number of interested applicants were called. We had leadership debates during that time. So, and I expressed my interest that I wanted to be the chairman. Later on, we had elections done, and when we had elections done, I successfully won the elections. I think there were about 1,800 registered voters, and out of that 1,200 and a bit voted, I got over 600 votes, and the other one split the rest of the votes between themselves.
How many candidates were there, and what was the process to being elected?
There were four candidates for the role of the chairman of the or the president of the community association. It was tough because, first of all, we had two leadership debates, and the leadership debates we had obviously were testing your ability to lead, your ability to be elected, and what you had in mind as your goals for the community leadership and the community office. There were also obviously a lot of challenging politics as well, and which, you know, those politics were social in nature, some were tribal in nature.
Were there any tribal issues during the process?
There were, yes, tribal issues. The war in South Sudan obviously brought out a lot of ethnic tensions. And, for example, you know, there were some community groups that did not want to participate in the election process, as you can see. If we have 1,800 registered members, and the South Sudan's population in Victoria is quite large, probably maybe 6,000 to 7,000 or 8,000 people, it does tell you that many did not register. Those that probably did not register probably were due to some reasons which can be excused, such as inability to meet timeline, or they were not in a position to vote during election, therefore they could not register. But there were those that were controlled by their sub-community leadership not to participate in the election purposely because of the war and the crisis in South Sudan. And it just translated directly here because some people perceive that the community leadership will be used as a political platform to advocate for one views or one political views of some particular groups in South Sudan rather than the other group.
So why did you want to become president?
I wanted to become the chairperson. Obviously, it is not a role that anyone can envy me because I have a full-time job as a lawyer, and I also have family commitments. But in my job, you know, previously when I worked for Victoria Police as a liaison officer for 2 years, and then eventually when I moved on to work as a lawyer for about 5 years, I came across a number of issues affecting people from our community. Young people, media problem, policing tensions, a bit of racism, and all sorts of issues that I've come across. I thought that, you know, going for the community leadership would be the best place to set me at the forefront of fighting and advocating on behalf of the community for these issues. You know, if there were racism, then I can speak out on behalf of the community. If there were policing tensions, and on one part we think, you know, the cards or the equation is not well balanced on our side because obviously we are a vulnerable community and some people want to take advantage of that, then I can act accordingly. If it was unemployment, then I can try to advocate for employment issues. Also, there were a number of other issues affecting people in the community, such as, you know, problems with the law, such as fines, and people did not know the process, lots of other legal processes whereby people don't have the information to be able to do those things or find directions as to where they should find those help. Those were the reasons that made me, and I'm working on trying to obviously make sure that I undertake those and make the change that I can make during my time.
That's called Michael Manoa, the newly elected leader of the South Sudanese community in Australia's Victoria State. He was speaking last week with Roar Court, a volunteer with the Sudan-Australia Integrated Learning Nonprofit Organization. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Mama Ama by Colonel Mido. We have been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Mama Ama. I can see my colleague Tito Justin is smiling here. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are happy you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.